Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It's a pleasure to have you once again and to be here once again, wherever you are, wherever you're listening. The pleasure is all mine to have you here for this edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. So I got a little bit of good news and a little bit of bad news, and we'll start with the bad news first. Unfortunately, we, as most can confirm, we now are going to be at least another week through, it seems, Wednesday of next week without a Memphis Grizzlies game. The next three games for the Grizzlies, one tonight, one Sunday, and I believe one Monday, there were going to be three games through this weekend, one against the Trailblazers, two again back-to-back with the Kings in Memphis. All three games have been canceled due to contact tracing for COVID-19. However, the good news is that allows for me to have the time to bring on some very special guests, and we get started with a very frequent one, but one of our favorite ones here, and that is former Locked On Grizzlies host Mark King. Mark, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm great. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, you are always welcome. It's great to be able to catch up with you every few weeks. And so, you know, obviously, Mark, you know, we're going to, in today's show, we're going to talk in the first segment, we're going to talk a little bit about COVID, get Mark's take on, you know, just COVID impacting the NBA. Also, his, assessment of the Grizzlies so far this season. And then we're going to have some fun in the second and third segments, really get into, you know, the potential of the one big move that we have been talking about for over the past year. Me and Mark have talked about it before on Locked On Grizzlies. But talk about some specific names and whether the timing makes sense for Memphis. But Mark, you know, this is a new normal, new horizon for the NBA, and the Grizzlies have been impacted. Obviously, it seems like it began with them playing other teams, the Timberwolves and potentially the 76ers. But, you know, it seems like there's known to be one positive test. We assume that it's Jonas Valanciunas. Don't want to speculate too much. But just overall, your thought process on the impact that COVID's having on the NBA and obviously now our Grizzlies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's obviously it's obviously a really tough spot that the Grizzlies and the NBA is in terms of COVID. It's a very terrible disease. It's ravaged a bunch of people, and so it transmission rates are extremely high. And so, you know, this is just a new protocol from the NBA, from the league-wide office of how to deal with the challenges of having, you know, one person test positive out. You know, obviously we have no idea if Jonas or not. I mean, even when D'Anthony Melton was away from the team, he never tested positive, and he was away from the team for a while. So, honestly, we really have no idea. But, you know, the big thing is that, you know, the league is trying to prevent an outbreak, you know, prevent like a, you know, multiple six, seven, eight people trying, you know, getting COVID all at once. And with the, you know, with transmission rates of COVID, it's extremely possible, extremely likely for that to happen, especially with all the players, you know, still being a part of the community, being out and being with their families, even though, you know, they're probably not supposed to. There's a lot of that still probably happening. And so it's a difficult situation that the NBA is in, and it's a difficult situation that the players are in. But, you know, it's just a probably like, hey, let's just look and see what we can do in terms of like sitting them out for a week instead of turning up game by game. Because you look at some of the games they played, and I was surprised they played on Monday, honestly, after what came out against the 76ers. So, you know, it really is just kind of a it's a difficult process and will continue to be difficult until, you know, a lot of the players receive vaccines. And I think that's probably will be sooner rather than later, even though that's probably much to some people's dismay that, you know, a lot of other, they will get it probably a lot more than, you know, more than other people will. So, you know, it's just a difficult process that the league is in, a difficult position that the Grizzlies are in. And there's really no way about that other than just trying to keep everybody safe and not playing games right now is the safest way they can do that.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of, you know, other news nuggets that have come out. You know, obviously, you know, there's been talk, you know, about, you know, what can the NBA do to potentially make the vaccine happen. Obviously, you don't want to take anything away from that vaccine being available to frontline workers and essential workers and, you know, those who, you know, obviously should be getting the vaccine first. You know, also, there was news today that Japan came out and said that they don't realistically see the Olympics being held this year. That came out just a few hours ago. You know, so what does that do to potentially, you know, give more leeway to the NBA to see what it can do as far as the scheduling goes? And, you know, a couple of things about this you know, stretch of games that the Grizzlies are not playing. It's three games where you hope everybody's safe. You hope there's no more positive tests. On the bright side, it's three games in which, you know, you don't have to play without, you know, potentially Justice Winslow and Jaren Jackson Jr. and others. So there's you know, definitely negative things. Also a few positives, but again, I agree with you. Just in general, you want to keep everybody safe, and I commend the NBA for taking the drastic steps that it needs to not halt the season, but to halt the spread as much as they can. But one of the reasons why it is a bit frustrating to see that the Grizzlies are going to be play are not going to play for an extended time is how well they've been playing. Mark, you've been seeing the games. I know that just you, like everybody else, really came away impressed with that victory over the Suns. Overall, your assessment since the last time we talked of the Grizzlies so far this season?
You know, they've had some ups and downs for sure. I thought that they the game against the Suns was probably their first, I think, quality win. You know, they've had a lot of games against teams that are playing their B unit or C unit, which we said, hey, those are good wins. But by the way, they didn't include Kevin Durant, and it didn't include Kyrie Irving, and so didn't include Joel Embiid. So there's a lot of those going around. But I thought that. I thought that was a good game for the Grizzlies. You know, you have to give the defense credit against the Suns. I think Devin Booker was like 5 for 20 or something like that, something crazy. I mean, I think that's more about Devin Booker than it probably is about the Grizzlies defense, just because, you know, the defense is just going to do so much. But it definitely helped that they had a terrible night shooting. But, you know, again, credit where the Grizzlies have done well. I mean, it helped that Ja Morant was back and he did Ja things in the fourth quarter. You know, finding Grayson Allen was just an insane pass. Like, those things that he can do, I mean, he changes the entire dynamic of the game for sure. And so that definitely helps. But even without Ja, they played great. You know, the defense has been much, much better. You know, unfortunately for them, I think they're still going to have to find a way to be better on offense. You know, the defensive rating, I think, is like 6 or something. But the offensive rating is still terrible. I mean, you can't win – you know, this is not sustainable for long term. I mean, it's great, but it's just not sustainable long term defensively with the offensive rating so low. It's just you have to generate points. So we saw this, you know, even go back into the core 4 years where they had great defenses, but their offensive was, you know, offensive rating was never above, you know, middle of the league or average, and they never did much of anything. And, you know, so I think they'll find that, though. You know, they're still missing a lot of pieces. A lot of their offense is still sitting on the bench and street clothes. And so, It's I think it should give everybody, you know, warm, fuzzy feelings to know that the defense is playing so well and they have probably 20 or 30 points per night sitting on the bench just waiting to get in the game. So that part of it should make us all feel really, really good. And I think Taylor Jenkins has done an incredible job this year in terms of, you know, what they're able to do, you know, defensively, schemes and the rotations. I think we've all questioned at times and rightfully so, but credit where credit is due. Coaching staff, it's hard to question the rotations when they're getting W's. So I think they've done a really impressive job so far this year.
And then we'll just, you know, in terms of this first segment, the thing that is this is that, okay, so you've seen the identity of this depth kind of emerge as defense. And I'm with you. I don't think that this team as is a top five defense. You know, as the schedule gets tougher, they're going to have game. They're not going to be able to keep opponents, you know, close to 100 every single night. But with the quality of defense that this depth has played, with some offensive talents coming back eventually, do you feel this team realistically has a shot at the playoffs?
Oh yeah, this team is definitely in that playoff race. Eight, nine, ten range there to get into the playoffs with the new play-in. So I think that it's definitely possible for sure. I don't think there should be any, I think with Ja and Jaren, and you have the offense and you have the defense of, you just look at it, you know, just the young guys. Xavier Tillman has been great on defense. Even, you know, I don't know if it's a consistent long-term thing, but he's been excellent. You know, obviously Desmond Bane's been excellent on offense. So, there's a lot of individual pieces that could frankly play a lot more minutes on other teams in this league. And so there's a lot of individual pieces that have been quite good this year. And I think you look at that and say, yeah, I think this team could definitely definitely be a playoff team this year. I think they're definitely in the mix, and will continue to be in the mix through probably the rest of the year. I would not be shocked at all. We look up and they're you know, right in that 7, 8, 9, 10 seed range at the end of the year.
Hopefully, obviously, with the motivating factor of last year not working out, you know, a lot of the players still have that fresh in their minds that will make the difference for them this year. But speaking of make a difference, Mark, a few days ago, brought up some pretty interesting ideas. One in particular, in a year that, you know, GM Zach Kleiman has talked about data accumulation, let's see what we've got. You know, it seems like that the Grizzlies continue to win. There may more sense may be made to make the one big move that we've been talking about now. It seems like ever since we drafted Ja Morant. Coming up, me and Mark will dive into that thought process. We'll discuss a few names, a few different perspectives as to whether or not it makes sense, but just see how likely it is the Grizzlies could pull off that one big move here in the near future. This weekend, we get to enjoy what I feel is the most exciting part of the NFL season, and that is Conference Championship Sunday. And the wonderful thing about it is that we all enjoy having fun watching two games in which the winners get to advance to the best day of the year in sports, which is Super Bowl Sunday. But what if you could have a little bit more fun besides just watching the game? The same thing goes for the NBA season that's in full swing, the NHL season that just has started, as well as the Major League Baseball season that's on the horizon. There's a place for you to go to not only have more fun than you usually would, but also to be able to profit a bit if you were to wager on sports. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account and at betonline.ag and use the promo code Locked On for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code Locked On to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at betonline_ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and use the promo code Locked On for your sign up bonus. Hashtag BetOnline. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with an analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts. All right, so Mark, let's jump right into it. So you brought up a very interesting scenario, and you know there are a lot of different perspectives that you can give. Me and you had probably could spend a couple of hours talking about all the different perspectives and mindsets, but one thing that you said that I agree with that really sticks out is in this scenario, which I'll let you explain in just a second, you stated that when you have the chance to get a superstar, you do it and then you figure it out. And I think that certainly is a very concise but critically important statement when it comes to trying to build, you know, a sustainable winner and contender. Give us some details as to, you know, just your thought process the other day when you had talked about the one big move that many have been talking about now for over a year.
Well, I mean, I think it starts with there's a couple of reasons I think that you look at, you know, and I want to preface this that, you know, before we have this discussion, the Grizzlies are not going to do any of the things that we're talking about. It's just, there's not. They have a very specific timeline. They are rebuilding. You know, they are seeing what they got in terms of players. So all that being said, I think there are a couple of reasons why I would consider accelerating that timeline, you know, in terms of, you know, rebuilding. And one is point guard Ja Morant. You know, you don't really know sometimes what you have, but when you have a superstar and you try to maximize his potential, I think you have someone as good as Ja, as quick as he is, you want to try to maximize what he can do for the least amount of money possible. And what I mean by that is Ja's on his rookie deal for 3 more years. And so is Jaren Jackson Jr. And so I think you look at that and you go, okay, I think you can probably fit a superstar money-wise, just financially on the cap, and probably get away with technically having two superstars in Ja and whoever that else might be, or two stars plus Jaren Jackson. I mean, there's a lot of depth you can do, and I think that was the kind of the reason behind it. Is that, look, you have this guy Ja Morant who is way better than we had anticipated, way quicker than we had anticipated. And so, okay, let's rebuild. We have someone he knows is a superstar right now. Like, he's good right now, and we know Jaren Jackson Jr. is good right now. We don't know if he's a star. It's still, I think that's probably still remains to be seen. But he is a very, very good NBA player, top 50 guy. Like, we got good people right now, and we got depth. And that's the biggest key to winning championships and being good long term in this league is depth. And the Grizzlies have depth almost to a fault, almost to a point where you can't play all the guys. You can't even play all the people you have right now, and you have two people sitting on the bench. And so you have enough depth rotation players where you could go out and make trades that would, you know, maybe two role players for one starter level play. You could go out and make those trades where it really wouldn't even hurt you that much in terms of depth, in terms of players. And they have enough draft assets now to where you could still go make trades and you still wouldn't lose anything. They have enough draft assets. They could trade two first round picks the next couple of years and still have first round picks to make. And so it's a little bit of hedging your bets in terms of getting someone now, see what you got with this young core, but also you still have protection in the future. The where if it goes south, you still have your pick in the next year's draft. You still can make that pick, no questions about it. And so I think they're set up in terms of the way Ja has developed, the assets they have got gathered, and the drafting they have done in terms of depth to really be like, okay, they have a lot of assets to go out and get things. They have a lot of to still protect themselves if things don't go right. So just a lot of flexibility. I think that, you know, I think now, like you mentioned, though, if there are superstars on the table to be had, and it's not often that they're on the table, someone like a Bradley Beal, if those people are available, you go out and get them, and you figure out the rest later in a couple of years. So if you have it, because they're very rarely available to trade. And the only way the Grizzlies are going to get a superstar here in this city is a trade.
And that's the thing about it, you know, when it comes to the, you know, decision of whether or not to make the one big move, I do get the argument that you it makes sense to make it while you've got both Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant, two players, you know. Do you max both of them? You know, you don't know. You're going to make big commitments. You're obviously going to max Ja, and hopefully Jaren's going to give you reason to max him here in the near future, obviously. But, you know, those extension talks with Jaren start this summer. You know, there could be an agreement this summer potentially. I don't know if that's the case or not, but that's how soon it could be. And so it really comes down to, you know, how do you want to make it fit the budget, or, you know, do you want to get further on the timeline? I'm of the one, as much as I agree with you get a superstar when you can get them if it makes sense, I'm of the one that right now, I just don't know if trading the overall majority of your valuable assets and consolidating it into one quality piece, I don't know if doing that allows for you to become the contender that you want to be when you make that type of investment. That's kind of my hesitation. But if you go talk about a Bradley Beal, I think that you have to make that commitment. Now, when you go talk about someone like a Zach LaVine, to me, that becomes a bit more realistic. You know, and that's the other question that it comes down to. You know, do you really go after that true superstar that, you know is going to cost you an amount you're uncomfortable paying? Or do you go with a very high ceiling, you know, potential all-star, kind of a fringe all-star option at the position that you really need? You know, and with as strong as the Grizzlies core already is, I think in terms of the cost of the trade, but in terms of the production that you'll get at the position that you need, it could make sense to go after a fringe all-star like Zach LaVine instead of a perceived superstar like Bradley Beal.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, I understand what you're saying too. And I think there are two very firm schools of thought in terms of the way you build a team. But at the end of the day, they start extension talks to Jaren this year, but even if they agree on something, it won't take effect until 2 years from now. And so they still have enough time where, again, you could afford another player. And then if you want to let them walk, you can let them walk. But in terms of just general overview of how you build that team and through the draft or through a trade or whatever, you know, I think you're looking at someone like Bradley Beal. I mean, again, this team needs wing scoring badly. I mean, Dylan Brooks is not the future. He's just not. And they're not going to get anywhere deep if that's who your two guard is or if that's your wing scorer. And to be quite honest, neither is Justice Winslow. I mean, I think everybody's excited about seeing Justice Winslow come back, and that's great. But no, that's not the answer either. And so you need a wing scorer that can create their own shot. And so you have someone like a Bradley Beal, who is a true superstar in this league. And what you're looking up to get, what you're getting, going to have to give up is at least three first, quality player like Dylan Brooks, probably another salary filler, Gorgie Jing, probably maybe another role player. But when you look at what do I have to give up to get someone like Bradley Beal? Let's look at you have three first. If you give up three first, you still have three first every year anyway. And if you give up Dylan Brooks, who cares? Dylan Brooks is great. He's a role player in this league. That's it. And if you give Gorgie Jing, who cares? Gorgie Jing is a salary filler. If you give up who are the other role players? Maybe they want Kyle Anderson. Again, I don't care. I don't care because you're sending out probably 18 points a game, and Bradley Beal can get you 30 or 40 on any given night, and so could John Morant, and so could Jaren Jackson Jr. And that's, for me, where I would say you got to go out and do it, mostly because right now you can afford it. Because whenever you have to max out Ja, like you said, when Jaren gives us a reason to max him out, which I think they will anyway, once you get two max players on the team, it gets really difficult to go out and get a third one without going to luxury tax. And it gets really difficult just to go out and fill out your team with quality, depth, and role players. And so I think that's why I would say, hey, look, let's use this 2-year window as try to go do something good. And then in 2 years, if it doesn't work out, we can let those players walk and max Jaren and Ja and kind of start over from there. You're really not losing much to me anyway.
No, and I agree with you, because I think that the other thing that, not a lot of attention is paid to, but, is something that is certainly relevant, especially for a small market team like Memphis, is that you see these teams like the Nets and other teams, the Warriors, for instance, who pay all this money to these players, are kind of like thinking, how are they making this fit? Well, it's because these owners are paying just absolutely astronomical amounts and basically luxury taxes in terms, they're paying extra money per year on top of the salaries they're paying their players just to be competitive. We don't know if Memphis is in that type situation. I would anticipate we probably are not to that level as of yet. We might be, but one day we may have to do that, but we don't know where we are there as of yet. So I think that you're right. It certainly becomes a bit harder to make it work once you max these players out. But the thing that I will add, though, Mark, is that that's kind of the caveat of these deals that the Grizzlies have signed players to, such as Tyus, such as Jonas Valanciunas, such as Dylan, such as De'Anthony Melton. The beauty of those deals is that they're money-matching deals as well, once you're ready to turn some quantity into quality, and you can make it make sense to trade those type of players with picks to eventually bring in that quality addition that will really be a part of your core. I think that's a very underrated, part of what this front office continues to do well, is thinking of the future by giving them as many assets as possible, including some of these deals that are still certainly tradable.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, again, you mentioned it in that sentence right there, we got to be able to, you have to turn quantity into quality, because in the playoffs, you're only playing 8 guys. You're only playing 9 guys, max. You're not going to – even in the playoffs, you're not going to go down playing 10, 11 guys like Jalen Jenkins is doing right now. It just won't work. It just won't work. It doesn't happen. And so if you want to win championships, the rotation's shortened in the playoffs. People start to figure out what you're able to do. People expose people – players like Grayson Allen very quickly – you have to be figure out what you can do to maximize that starting unit to where they're getting the most points possible. And then you have some firepower off the bench. And if you can get away with not trading Tyus and Brandon Clark and Desmond Bane and De'Anthony Melton, that's your firepower off the bench. I mean, that's an extremely good bench unit. And you still have players you can trade, like a Grayson or like a John Conchar, Gorgie Jang for salary. So there's tons of things they can do and tons of players they could potentially give up and really not affect their rotations all that much. And I think that's the point I was trying to make the other day. You have a 2-year window of financial flexibility to be able to go do it and have quality starters still on your, you know, quality starters, and also have a bench depth that I think you can get away with, because they've got enough assets in terms of just players, role players, and as well as draft assets.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to look at this scenario, the one big move type scenario. I think me and Mark are in agreement, probably a bit too early, but it's eventually going to come where it's going to make sense for the Grizzlies to make this type of move. What really matters with the potential target that they have in terms of the player that they may try to trade for? Coming up, we'll discuss a little bit more specifics as far as that goes here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Go behind the scenes of the game you love and get all sides of the story with the Rejecting the Screen podcast. Each week, Noah Kozlov and Adam Stanko get personal while interviewing players, coaches, media members, all the people who make the NBA happen. Subscribe to Rejecting the Screen wherever you get podcasts. So, Mark, I've kind of alluded to it before, and I mentioned it before. I think that with the way this Grizzlies team is set up, their premier talent being a point guard, and John Morant, who is a superstar type potential, they have a very intriguing shooting big in Jaren Jackson Jr. This team feels like it kind of like the Toronto Raptors in the 18-19 season, in which they had the supporting cast already there. They just needed that true superstar type talent, in which they got in Kawhi, and obviously we saw the end result with them winning a title. Do you feel like the Grizzlies are going to be that type of approach to really be a title contender? When they're at their peak, will they try to go get that ringer for 1 year? Or do you think a big factor into who they may target when they eventually make the big trade to compliment John Jaren, do you think it's going to be very important that that target is controllable for multiple years?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to. I mean, because the volatility of the NBA is so high. You know, it's so difficult to win in this league, especially when you have players like LeBron and Anthony Davis still on the same team. It is so difficult to win championships, as we have all been through with the core four, with Mike and Zach and Tony. I mean, it is so difficult just to get to Western Conference Finals every time you thought it was your year because of this, that, and the other. It wasn't. And so I think for the Grizzlies, or for any team really, you have to have the flexibility to where if you don't win, you know, 1 year, you got to be able to run it back and just kind of go from there. And I think that, you know, the Raptors winning that 1 year is Kawhi Leonard, and he's like one of the best players in the league. So I think that has everything to do with Kawhi and nothing to do with how other people build their teams. And so I think that, you know, you have to have the flexibility financially, and, you know, have at least a couple years with whoever they're going to target, whoever they're going to trade for, as their wing player. You have to be a wing player because you've got your point guard position sewed up. You've got your big star kind of showed up, and the next person, you know, next kind of trio to circumvent or to, you know, kind of lock that down is a wing player. And so you got to have someone that can get their own shot. I mean, we'd all know Ja can get the paint anytime he wants, but having that third option is really what sets elite teams apart.
Well, and I think that that's the other thing that, you know, really comes into play then is, so if we're looking at someone who we need to have control under for multiple years, you know, that kind of brings into the template that you've seen recently in the NBA, where you've had a team that has a star that wants out, they have multiple years on the contract, and they trade them. You know, I know Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday only had 1 year, but they're likely going to re-sign with the teams that they, you know, are going to. You saw New Orleans trade them. You saw Houston trade James Harden, OKC trade, you know, Paul George. And the general template has been this, is that the team that is trading the star, they focus on a trading partner that has a championship window for a few more years. And to make it worth trading the star, what they do, these teams that are trading the stars, the teams that are getting the bevy of picks and players in return, that team is putting a preference on pick swaps and picks further out in the future that elongates their benefit, but also gets the chance to get picks and pick swaps past when the team they're trading with's championship window is. And I think that that's something that, you know, kind of works to the Grizzlies' favor and against them, because the Grizzlies' championship window probably is going to be a little bit longer in theory than a lot of other teams because of how young their stars are. So teams like Dallas and New Orleans and, you know, Memphis, their picks may not be as valuable as picks like Golden State has, because the windows for New Orleans, Dallas, and Memphis are probably longer than Golden State. But the Grizzlies do have a few picks in Utah's first that, you know, eventually will, you know, convey in one of these years, and the 2024 for Golden State that are attached to title contenders with short windows. So my question to you is, Mark, considering all that, I really think that that goes to show that the front office, I think for opposing teams, Memphis is one of the more attractive teams to talk with because of their young players, but also the variety of different picks that they have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, if you're a team that's rebuilding, the assets usually are draft picks. That's the assets you want. I mean, and extending that window, what did Brooklyn get? Like, what did Houston get? 7 first rounders? What, 6? I don't know what it was. It was a bunch, you know, a ton. So, you know, most teams target those draft assets. Obviously, that's the easiest way, cheapest way to, you know, put valuable assets into your team or leverage those assets into different assets in a trade. And so, yeah, I mean, I think super smart. It was a brilliant trade for you know, Houston. They did a really good job in terms of getting rid of somebody who didn't want to be there and get a lot for it too. But in terms of the Grizzlies, you know, they're going to have to give up something. You know, it's not somewhere where you just, it's not going to, after we've seen the trades that have gone down, with, you know, the trade, something like with Anthony Davis, but, you know, just as recently with just James Harden, that sets the market, you know, that sets the market. If James Harden is worth 7 first or whatever it is, then that means that Bradley Beal is worth at least 3 or 4, maybe 5. You know, like that's what teams do. They say, hey, well, James Harden, my guy, got 7 first or whatever it was. Again, I don't remember exactly how many, but if he got, you know, he's got that many, then, you think that, you know, Bradley Beal is probably, you know, maybe 3 or 4 kind of spots in terms of, you know, shooting guards in the league. Maybe he's 3 or 4 spots behind James. Maybe only 2 or 3. And that's how they gauge trades. And so once something like that trade happens, it's good and bad for a lot of teams, because it's good in the sense that that other teams are getting value for their stars. Because I was under the impression for a long time that it was hard to get proper value for a superstar because it was just nobody wanted to give it up. But now it's unfortunate, because now that's kind of the going rate for those guys. And so a lot of teams will point to that exactly and say, hey, we want at least something consumer to that for our superstar, because we've seen what other people are getting and we know what people are willing to pay, and you guys better start trying to pay it. So it's good and bad for the Grizzlies. And I think people will try to leverage that against the Grizzlies. And hopefully they will be able to, you know, get it back to a point where it's manageable for them and not too far out that it feels like it hampers the future of the team. And that's what you got to have to balance. Like you mentioned earlier, you got to balance the fact that you do make a trade that makes you better without destroying the future of the Grizzlies that we have seen for so long as a team, just trades that are just destroying the future of this team. And they've just now gotten to where they have all their future picks again, and do they want to go start trading them again? So, you know, it's a bit of a, you know, balancing act that you have to try to figure out what's best for your team.
And the last question that I'll ask, Mark, is that, you know, you had mentioned about mortgaging your future. Well, you know, say we go through this year and say we go through next year and, you know, the Lakers win three, you know, they win back-to-back titles to make it 3 straight titles. You now have the Nets, you now have the Bucks, you now have the Clippers. You know, over that time, you have several of these teams that have mortgaged their future to make these big moves to be true title contenders over the next few years, but it hasn't worked out. Do you think a scenario like that kind of corrects the market to where, you know, like you mentioned in the past, teams were very weary to mortgage their futures for one star. Now we're kind of in an era where teams are okay with it. But if it doesn't work out for several teams, like if you don't see, you know, 2 or 3 teams win the title over the next 3 years, you only see one. Do you think the market corrects itself to where teams once again start to think, okay, is it really worth it if there is clear multiple super teams in place? Could the market correct itself, you know, potentially to lower the value on some of these players in the future and really be, you know, good for a team like the Grizzlies who have a lot of assets to trade?
Oh yeah. I mean, GMs are just like, they're normal people, you know, they're smart, really smart people, but they're people just nonetheless, and they see those things and it fluctuates. When you, you know, sometimes make a bad decision, are you hesitant to to go, you know, do that thing, or if you see a friend make a bad decision, are you hesitant to do that thing that they did? And so, you know, it's a little bit like that. I mean, the market will eventually swing back the other way, where people are very hesitant to do what they need to do, you know, to mortgage the future if it doesn't work out for the Nets. If the Nets go down when they don't win a championship, and honestly for them, if they're not in the finals, I think it's a disappointment. I think it's not a success in terms of what they were looking to do this year. And so I think if you see someone like the Nets, you know, good bounce in the first round, or hell, don't even make the playoffs, then yeah, if people will start to point that and go, I don't know if that was even worth it. And people will probably already around the league saying, hey, I don't know if I would have done that, because that is a lot of stuff. I mean, we all said it, even on Twitter, it was like, that was a lot of stuff for James Harden. Like, I understand he's the best shooting guard in the league. I get it, but that's a lot of stuff for James Harden. And so I think people are already doing that. And if it doesn't, you know, definitely if it doesn't work out, people will definitely start to, you know, just internally start to question what they would give up for a potential superstar, for sure. But, you know, you got to look at other guys that below that. I think you got to look at, like you mentioned, a Zach LaVine, or a couple of guys that just got traded. I would have liked them to look at would be like a Victor Oladipo or Caris LeVert. Those guys that can get their own shot, but maybe don't cost as much as someone like a Bradley Beal, but maybe get you, you know, 85% of the production that he would get you. And so I think you can live with those type of things. I think that's probably the direction they'll go for. I don't ever see the Grizzlies making like a big swing and trying to go get a superstar. That's not the way they operate. That's not the way this front office operates. If they do anything, I think it will be for those second tier guards that can, you know, get their own shot. But maybe it's maybe it's 85% of the production you would have at a Bradley Beal type of thing.
It's really going to be an interesting topic. And the great thing about it is that, you know, just, you know, we're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of sitting here trading Mark Gasol. And, you know, this time 2 years ago, we were all talking about what are we going to get? What are we going to get to really start the rebuild? And now, thankfully, 2 years later, just to show how good this rebuild is, we're sitting here talking about, okay, you know, when is it going to be the time to make this move to be a true playoff contender? When is the time going to be to make this move to maybe be a title contender? That just goes to show how well this rebuild has been. And I'm going to tell you this, Mark, because I know that me and you talked about the Gasol trade when it happened a few years ago. It's a lot more fun speculating about these type of trades than those type of trades. And I certainly hope that continues for a while. But Mark, it's always an absolute pleasure. I hope the new year is treating you well. What is going on your end as far as the career goes? And just in general, what are you looking forward to as far as the NBA and the Grizzlies go on your end? Any special projects going on?
Oh, you know, just plugging away at the normal video stuff. We have projects going on, seems like, every week. But, you know, we're just hoping to watch some more Grizzlies games, man. You know, it was kind of a bummer they postponed them, but I think it's best, obviously, for the health and safety of all the players. But, you know, it's always fun to watch the Grizzlies play, especially the way they were playing, just kind of a hard-nosed defense. That's always fun to watch, too. And it's always fun to talk with people on the internet about it. You know, as much as people hate or love the rotations, that's always a fun topic of discussion, it seems like, every game. So yeah, just hopefully the Grizzlies get back to it and we can all enjoy it as well as, you know, kind of talk about it together.
And that's the great thing about being a Grizzlies fan right now, with just how exciting this young core is. You know, a lot of people in general who are Grizzlies fans and a lot of people around the NBA, the more they talk about the Grizzlies, the more you come to learn there are a lot of intelligent people out there, you know, that like to talk about the Grizzlies, and it makes conversations a lot of fun. But as always, you know, Mark will be a frequent guest on the show. He is, you can find him at King_producer, doing great work through several projects that he has going on. But we always welcome Mark to the show. You can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSEC, the podcast wherever podcasts are available: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, podcast app on your phone. Please go listen, subscribe, enjoy. And we always want to make sure we're providing content that's relevant to our listeners' preferences. For Mark King, Mark, if you'll stick with us for just a second after the show, but for Mark King, my name is Sean Coleman. This has been a fun conversation. We'll probably do it again here soon as we get close to the trade deadline. But until next time, we'll talk to you again soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.